Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Wednesday, June 9th, and we're back with you after a day off.
Woo!
Where we get to sleep in a little. Did you go back to sleep?
I think it actually excited me so much to have a morning off to sleep in that I actually rose from the bed. I love coming in, don't get me wrong, but every now and again, it's nice.
It's to nice to have time off. I know. I've been there.
A nice impromptu morning.
Yeah.
Like, yes. So great.
Well, I had some things to do early in the morning, so I had to cancel. But, you know, because the new station has been keeping me busy and everything, so a lot of things going on and stuff.
A lot of,
Yeah, like I told you, I was telling you before, I'm like, there's so much on my mind, you know. I'm like totally stressed out.
Got to make
out.
A list.
Yeah. I got to clear it up for your birthday on Sunday.
Yes.
So I can actually enjoy myself a little bit.
Yes.
You know,
just at least a little bit of it.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, take a little break.
It's hard to relax.
Yeah.
It really is.
It is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know why that is, but that's why I like weed, because it makes me relaxed, you know. So.
Well, it makes me the opposite.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it makes you like what? Want to move and want to get going or what?
It makes me physically lazy, but mentally,
right.
I'm just racing.
Right.
I mean, I'm constantly racing anyway.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's hard to relax. Like, we live in a society that prides us on being so busy and working really long days and working really, really hard. But like, when people go off and enjoy life, everyone treats it like they're being lazy or
right.
entitled or whatever. But,
yeah,
you know,
I know.
It feels shitty.
I think the pandemic has made a lot of people lazy. I know it's made me lazy.
Mm.
And I've never been like that before, you know.
Mm.
But you get into a certain pace, I guess, you know. And
yeah.
then so it's... So it's taken some effort for me to get busy again, but
yeah.
But hey, you know, that's where I like to be, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I like to be busy. It keeps me out of trouble, you know?
You got to stay busy.
Yeah. So
it's going to be a weird adjustment, you know?
Yeah.
It'll probably take a solid month or so to get a little
probably,
you know, routine going.
I know.
Yeah.
You don't have to cry for me or anything, but I am struggling right now.
It's all right. You'll get through it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a few minutes, we're going to have a guest calling in, and he wrote an or I don't know if it's writing. Yeah, even if it's an audiobook, you write it first.
Yeah.
Yeah. Except I never heard of an audiobook without the print version, but he did write a screenplay for this, so we're going to ask him about that and stuff.
Okay, great. Yeah, he's a former Eagle. Go Birds.
Yeah, there you go.
Yes.
Go Birds.
Go Birds. That's what we say back home. Yeah. It's a Philly
Forget
team.
Eagles, right?
Yeah, we just say birds. Go Birds.
Why, is Eagles like too long or something or what?
No. It's just they're
a
birds.
Nickname.
Yeah, it's a nickname.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very nickname kind of town.
Yeah. Eagles are cool, you know?
Philly teams are just Philly.
I mean the animal, the bird. But
oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. They are really cool. I was going to say Philly teams. Not Philly teams.
Yeah, because I don't know much about the Philly teams. But
it's not so much the Philly teams. It's the Philly fans.
Oh, okay.
Like the fans of all the Philly teams.
Right.
They're total lunatics.
Right.
In the best way.
And what their baseball is what? Red Sox or something? No,
that's Boston. Yeah. We're the Phillies.
Oh, yeah, Philadelphia Phillies, of course.
Yeah.
I know nothing about baseball whatsoever.
Yeah.
Football a little bit, you know, because I used to watch it.
And then hockey is the Flyers in my area, and basketball is the 76ers. Apparently they won last night.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, good for them.
Yeah.
After the Lakers have been kicked out, you know.
Have they been kicked out?
Yeah.
I have not been following.
They lost.
Oh,
they
man.
Lost. They're no longer in the running.
Wah, wah, wah.
Very unusual, right, for the
yeah.
Lakers. I mean,
usually,
they always win.
I know.
They always win.
It's expensive to go see them.
Yeah.
For really shitty tickets, it was like $300-$400.
What?
was like, ugh.
Are you serious?
Mm-hmm.
For shitty tickets?
Pretty much. I mean, maybe not shitty shitty, but like mid shitty.
Yeah, but how are people supposed to go and see this? Like the average person cannot afford that.
Right. Like it's not like I'm asking for courtside.
Yeah.
Even though, I mean, I'll take it.
Yeah, of course. So that would be a few thousand dollars right there.
That's okay. I would rather spend a few thousand dollars, I mean, if I had it, on that than spend like $400 for shitty.
Right. Well, if you had it. If you had a lot of money, I mean, $4,000, you have to have a lot of money for it not to be expensive for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
So it's not just having any money. Mm. You better be rich to be able to go to the Lakers games.
Yeah.
Good things we have TV. We can watch it there, you know?
Yeah. Maybe I will find that sugar daddy after all.
Yeah. Go looking for them, you know? I'm sure there's people out there, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't
waste your time on poor kids, you know?
Yeah.
They'll get you nowhere. That's funny. So how you doing? You doing good?
Yeah, I'm good. You want to hear something really funny?
Yeah.
I haven't really smoked weed in like probably 2 months or something.
Wow, and that's a long time.
Yeah, I take breaks and then I do a little here and then I take breaks. I just try to get it out of my day-to-day lifestyle because it was making me really lazy.
Yeah.
And like messing with my diet and everything like that. And I don't want to sit there and smoke and like fixate on like cheesecake and then have to like go leave the house to go get cheesecake or something.
And it's hard to fight the urge when you're high.
I get fixated on it when I smoke and I can't live like that.
Wow.
And so I was opening this face mask jar in my bathroom. I was about to like put some on because I thought it was almost empty. I was like, let me just use this up. And I opened it and the whole jar was filled with weed.
Wow.
I filled it with weed like
and you didn't remember.
4 or 5 months ago and wow. I didn't remember. I have an entire jar of just packed to the top. I was like, oh.
Is it still fresh? It's probably dry by now, right?
It's a little, but it's still a little sticky.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was like, okay.
So you put it in that jar. Where was the jar? Where it always is?
It's been in my bathroom.
Where it always is. So it's not like you put it in a special place or something.
You know, now since I've had to like gut my bathroom and like from moving and things like that, I've probably brought it with me different places too, thinking it was this face mask.
Right.
And then just not used it. And like I think when I went home for a month over the summer, I think I had it with me.
Oh, okay.
As a face mask. And I was like, I'll take this and I'll use the rest of it and then I'll get rid of it. And then I was like, I didn't use it. I'll just pack it and bring it back home with me.
So you took it on the plane with you? Weed?
I guess so. I didn't realize that's what was in there.
Yeah.
That would have been such an honest
truth. No, but you didn't make a conscious decision to take it with you?
No.
You bought it here? Or however you got it?
Yeah.
You got it here. Okay.
Yeah.
So you took it. God, you could have gotten in trouble.
I know. I actually think it's some of that. I think you gave me a big bag of some once.
Yeah.
And I think that was it.
Mm.
I think that's what that was. I think that was like part of it. Yeah.
Wow.
Because I had gotten rid of most of it. I used to separate it into little jars for myself so that it would just be in jars instead of a baggie.
Right.
Yeah. And I guess I just forgot about one of the jars.
Jeez. So did you smoke any of it?
Yes.
And what was it like?
It was nice. I just took two little puffs off my bowl and that
course,
was it.
Of course, because after you haven't smoked in a long time, you don't need a lot.
Exactly. It's so great.
Yeah.
You know, literally just I took a little pinch, put it in a bowl.
Right.
That was it.
Yeah, and you're not hurting your lungs or anything. It's recommended
gentle.
That you don't smoke every day, but I'm still trying to practice that.
I know. The part that kills me is that it reduces blood flow to your brain, and I'm really conscious/ self-conscious about neurodegenerative stuff because my dad had neurod stuff.
Right.
And it says that it really slows down blood flow to your brain.
Really?
Which you don't want, yeah.
I thought it's the opposite.
Yeah, it's not.
It feels like it.
Sometimes,
it feels
right?
like it makes it go faster.
I know.
I don't know, man. But don't start scaring me now. Shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I quit the cigarettes. I'm happy about that.
Yeah, that's
This I'm cutting down. It just said during the pandemic when there wasn't a lot to do.
Yeah.
You know, it helps with the boredom and stuff.
Yeah,
come
boredom.
On.
And then you get a cheesecake and then you're not bored for 20 minutes.
Right. And then having to exercise it all off, you know?
Yeah.
They'll keep you busy, too.
Yeah. Definitely.
Oh, God.
If you can get off the couch to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know. Oh, well, what are you going to do?
I went for a swim this morning. It was really nice. They opened the pool hours longer.
Uh-huh.
And there was no one there. It was
empty.
That's
nice.
Yeah. It was a nice warm pool.
Yeah.
It's great.
Are you going to start doing it every day?
I usually swim like twice a week, one to two times a week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's nice to just...
Yeah, I like swimming.
Yeah, it's good.
It's good, yeah.
I need it.
I know. But not in the ocean, you know?
The ocean's got some creepy stuff going on there.
Yeah, you know? I mean, it's pretty dangerous, you know? I have the story here. We're talking about the ocean. In Alaska, off the Coast Guard had to rescue three people and two dogs that were in an inflatable pink flamingo raft.
Jeez.
Now, you go on this thing, and I'm asking you, do you really want to go in the ocean with something like this?
Like a raft?
Yeah.
No.
I mean, it's crazy.
It's
going
to take you too far away.
You know it will. And how the hell are you going to paddle back, you know?
You're not.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't.
So what are they thinking, you know? I mean, what the hell? You know, and then people have to come and rescue you, and it costs hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Does it?
Well, yeah, if they have to bring a fucking helicopter or something, you know, or a boat.
That would be amazing.
You know, but...
It's still not worth the fear of just being in the ocean with, like, limitless water under you. I just don't want that. I want to want that, but I don't want that.
Right.
Like, what's... There are things under me that I can't see.
Exactly. And that's kind of scary as well.
Yeah, that's what I don't
want. You know, in some beaches, they have, like, jellyfish and stuff. You
yeah,
know?
Like I seasons don't... No.
Where they wash up and stuff. I know. In Israel, when we went to the beach, they come every summer. And you have to look inside the water to make sure you're not, because they burn, man. They're like, you know. But.
No.
Yeah. Plus, you know, I mean, we went to the lake and I wouldn't fucking rent a jet ski because I didn't know if I'd know how to get back, you know, like where I took off from, you know. If you go so far, and maybe it's irrational, but hey, I had that fear, you know, because you have to think. Yeah. Once you're there, what are you going to do, you know? I mean, you don't want surprises.
I don't want any surprises.
Right.
Unless you have, like, full radar on me.
Yeah.
None.
So I'm saying even in the lake, I'm not going to go in a fucking raft, man. You're not going to come back, that's for sure. Not
it's
by
just
yourself.
Like, I hate to even feel this way, but just natural bodies of water like that feel... Yeah. I'm sorry, they just feel creepy.
Yeah.
You know, I remember having to go in the lake at camp, and I always had to wash weird stuff out of between my butt crack every time. I would get home, and there would be, like, this weird seaweed kind of stuff every time.
Right.
Like, as if my butt crack was a filter that had been just filtering all the water. Like, there was so much junk in there. I'd have to, like, then gather it in the shower at the end of my shower and clear it out.
Yeah,
wow. It was like all, like off the floor. Like there was so much of it.
Right. And that's in the beaches on the East Coast, right?
That's in lakes.
Oh, in a lake.
Yeah.
Oh.
The beach isn't that much better, too. I mean, sometimes you get these gobs of seaweed that just feel like somebody's hair just tangling around you.
Yeah.
You know?
I remember also a thing was, when I grew up in Israel, was tar. Did you ever see tar washing up?
Mm-hmm.
I guess it comes from like spills and shit in the ocean and stuff.
Oh, wow.
So you get like pieces of tar washing to the shore and you step on it and then it doesn't come off, you know? So
oh, no. What?
Yeah, it doesn't come off. I mean, it sticks to you and then you have to, it's hard to get it off.
Yeah.
But they would have these special things with like brushes and gasoline or something where you'd.
Jeez.
You know?
Yeah, that's rough.
That's rough. That's
really rough.
I know. But what are you going to do, you know? I mean, the thing is, but the beaches there are amazing. I got
to
tell you.
Yeah, I've been to the beach there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
There's nothing like it. I mean, the water is clear. The sand is fine. Yeah, a lot of things and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
You see those, like, they have, like, big, like paddle boards or something where the people stand on them.
A boogie board.
Right, like a boogie board. And they stand on it like on a surfboard. It's like a surfboard, but bigger. And it's got paddles and stuff that you hold in your hands.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's not a boogie board. I was thinking something else.
Yeah. But the lifeguards use it, and you can rent them, you know. So you can put like 10 people on it and have a blast, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's what I'm saying. I mean, and then there's kind of air tennis or something like that, you know, where.
Like volleyball?
Know. Yeah. No, not volleyball, but I'll explain after our guest is calling
okay.
in.
Got it.
Right now, so we're going to take the call.
All right, let's do it.
Yeah. Good morning. Is this our guest? Hello, Mike?
Is this Sam?
Yeah, Mike.
Yeah, this is Mike Barilla. How you doing?
Yes, Mike. Thank
hey,
you
Mike.
For calling in. Mike Barilla. Barilla, right? Am I saying that correctly? Barilla?
Correct, Mike. Barilla.
Barilla. Okay, that makes sense. And we were just discussing you were a former Eagles quarterback. When did you play for the team?
You know, I played during the 70s, and I kind of played in an historic time.
Yes.
One of the guys I played with was named Vince Papale, and Disney actually made a movie about him called Invincible.
Oh,
and it actually became a very successful sports movie.
Right.
And I played during that time, and if you watch the movie in the trailer, you can see me getting sacked by a New York Giants linebacker. And so I played during the 70s. I was an All-American quarterback at Stanford during the 70s, and so I used to play there in L.A. every year at the L.A. Coliseum.
Oh, wow.
There in Los Angeles.
When that was still a thing, you know? No, there's not much going on there. But, Mike, are you originally from Philadelphia, or did you move there to play?
You know, actually, I was born in New York, and I was raised on the bench of the New York Knicks. And my father was a former pro basketball player for the Knicks and also was their head coach. So I was born in New York, came to Colorado, and then when I was in high school, there was only one place to go, and that was California. And I went to Stanford. After I graduated from Stanford, I signed with the Philadelphia Eagles and drove across country in my 1974 Audi from San Francisco to Philadelphia and started playing football there.
Wow.
Oh, I love that.
Were you playing football in college?
I was actually an All-American quarterback at Stanford University.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So,
and I played in college, played in high school, and actually started playing football, organized football in the third grade at quarterback. So I actually played 20 years at quarterback all the way through 5 years in pro football with the Philadelphia Eagles and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. My second year, I was invited to play in the Pro Bowl, and I got in with 7 minutes to go in the game and threw two touchdown passes in the last 7 minutes, one which was called the Barilla Special, which I designed to put into the game plan to win the game by 3 points. With the last 30 seconds to go, and I was MVP in the Pro Bowl my second year.
Wow, wow. Very impressive, Mike. I really, you know, I used to watch football, especially in the 70s, and, you know, but I don't remember much from it because I was more like just watching and rooting for my teams, you know, so I didn't know what else was going on in the league and stuff. But obviously, you're pretty big at the time, and that's commendable. That's very cool. Where are you calling us from this morning? Where do you live now?
I'm calling you from my house in Castle Rock, Colorado.
Oh, wow.
And that's where I live. I'm happily married to Annie. We have 4 boys, and I live here in Castle Rock. And we're headed to Los Angeles, Newport Beach, on the first week in August for vacation.
Oh, okay,
fine.
Yeah. For vacation is fine. I was just going to ask, why would you move here?
Everybody's... For vacation is fine.
Yeah.
We make a pilgrimage to a place called The Wedge about every 2 or 3 years. My family does.
Uh-huh.
And that's the most incredible body surfing spot there in Newport Beach.
Oh, wow. Very cool. It's nice to be able to travel again now after a year and a half of just being stuck at home. So that's nice.
Oh, it's really, really nice, and yeah, we're really looking forward to it.
Right.
This has been a bizarre year, to say the least. And,
yeah.
We're slowly recovering from it and starting to be social again and go out to coffee shops and restaurants. So
right.
Here in Douglas County, nobody wears a mask. We're all pretty much open here.
Right, yeah. No, I was in Colorado back in October, and already I noticed that a lot of people were not wearing masks, and
yeah,
there was indoor dining and everything, you know.
I'm from Philly, and everything back there is pretty open.
Yeah, so it's mostly here.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But everything's going to open
up.
You're
from Philadelphia?
I grew up right over the bridge, actually, in Jersey, but 10 minutes from Philly.
Yeah.
Excellent, because we used to cross the bridge every day to go to practice from New Jersey, so I remember that area real well.
Okay, what part of Jersey?
It was called Clementon, New Jersey.
Oh, yes. I know Clementon very well.
It's where all the football players would kind of rent small apartments, and very interesting area, kind of a tough area. And it's Philadelphia is kind of a neat place, kind of a tough place, though, too.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
that's what I heard.
Yeah, it can be.
Wow. And now you're in Colorado, and that's a cool place. How did you end up in Castle Rock? What was special about that place for you?
Well, interesting, because actually the reason why we're in Castle Rock is my son has Down syndrome, and we came down here because Douglas County has the most money and the best special needs programs for Down syndrome children. So
wow,
that we came down there to be next. He goes to a school called Wellsprings, and we moved about 1 mile from Wellsprings to be here, close to that.
Wow. Very, very interesting. Yeah. All right, Mike. Well, let's get to your book, to your creation called Mark of the Beast. Now, in my notes here, it says that there's an audio book and also a screenplay. And I was asking Jen earlier, would there not be a print version of a book as well? So is this going to be in print, or is it pretty much in audio?
Well, right now, just last Tuesday, it went live audio. And yes, I do have plans to turn it into a hard copy book, probably in August. And I was also thinking about doing an ebook as well.
Right.
All three of those, the audio book, the ebook, and the hard copy book.
Right.
My other goals are, I do want to have it performed. It's more of a, rather than an audio book, it's more of an audio movie. My voices are movie actors.
Oh.
And they're actually performing roles in the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually want it to be also performed in French and marketed over in France, and also in Spanish and marketed in Mexico and Spain.
Oh, nice. So so tell us a little bit about the story. What's this about? I know it's a science fiction book. Tell us pretty much at least the gist of the story.
The story is the way I describe it is a sci-fi dystopian saga in post-World War III America.
Mm.
And the main characters are a former Stanford football player whose nickname was Young Buck,
uh-huh,
and his wife and his son. And they are on the run from the Antichrist forces in post-World War III America, which name has been changed to Oceania. And in the first scene, they are in their hideout, which is in a cave on the east rim of the Grand Canyon. 80 feet below the rim and 220 feet above the Colorado River with a small ledge in front of it. And in order to survive in this very hostile location, they have to wear Bedouin robes and high-tech cooling gloves in order to hydrate their and cool their core body temperatures. So if they refuse to take a vaccine with a RFID chip in it, and so they had to go on the lam, and that's how the story starts.
I see. Wow, I mean, this sounds a lot like what's going on now.
Yeah, exactly.
A little bit, but, you know, I mean, World War III scares the hell out of me, you know, the idea
I think it should.
So what happens in the war? Does the U.S. become like a wasteland?
I do that in the first, I discuss that in the first 3 minutes. If you want to listen to the trailer, you'll hear what happens. But in my story, the science fiction story, the United States loses World War III.
Right.
And it is not fought over in Europe or in the Middle East. It's fought in the United States. And the winners are Russia and China.
Right.
And that part I wrote 5 years ago. And it was so disturbing to people when I sent out the script that they got so mad at me for having the United States losing World War III, that I put it on ice for about 4 years. And then about a year ago, when things started happening and it looked like this is going to happen, I decided to make it into an audio book.
Right.
So it is in post-World War III America. I do have the United States is suffering from a massive drought that turns the West into a desert. And so they have horrible fires in California, and I start the script off with the horrible fires that are in California.
Right, which is also a reality.
Yeah, it is.
Today.
We're getting into that season.
Right, it's very the drought that I've been following. What's called the drought monitor for 10 years, and this is the worst I've ever seen it.
Yeah,
as far as the Southwest United States, by far.
Yeah, you're
finally,
right.
The words that they're using are calling it a mega drought.
Really? Yeah, it sure feels like it. You know, I mean, I lived in this part of the country for 40 years, and I remember winters with rain. You know, now there's barely any rain, no water at all, and everything's dry, and prone to fires, you know. So it's amazing you were able to see all these things way ahead of when they, you know, than when they happened.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's pretty cool. Now, I wanted to ask, so Russia and China, so in the story, is most of the population in the country gone, or how is... How is it exactly? I mean, are those like a few people that were left, or what was the story?
Well, I don't go into actually how much the population is reduced, because it's hard to say what's going to happen as far as the population, but they are kind of turned into zombies by getting this RFID chip.
Oh, wow.
And the character who introduces the RFID chip is this creepy, nerdy-looking scientist named Dr. Bates.
Uh-huh.
And he wears glasses and is very nerdy-looking.
Uh-huh.
And he introduces it to some scientists on the fifth level underneath the Denver International Airport, and he describes it as having a termination component into it.
Yeah,
and that they are going to put it into a vaccine, but not tell anybody that's in the vaccine.
I know,
right.
Man.
Sounds a little too familiar.
Yeah, I know, man. With the chips and everything, you know, all these conspiracy theories.
It does sound familiar, because, honest to God, they were talking about this 7 years ago. I was reading about this 7-10 years ago.
Really?
And, and like I said, I wrote most of it 5 years ago, but it does sound like it's happening now. And a lot of people are calling this, whatever it is we're having. They call it the plandemic. Some people call it that.
The plandemic? Oh, the one we're having now, you mean?
The one we're having now.
Because right. It's planned is the,
right,
is the theory.
Right. Yeah. I thought he was talking about
and,
the book.
But. And that is the one. Now, the one that's in Mark of the Beast, I don't think is this one. It's the next one that's coming. So, and I think there may be another one that's coming that may be a little bit more contagious and a little bit more deadly.
Interesting. You think that's going to happen?
This is sci-fi.
Right.
This is sci-fi. You can do things, and I don't want people to get so upset about this they to get creeped out.
But, that's okay. But
I did describe it as sci-fi.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and books are not supposed to be politically correct and make people feel good necessarily, you know. I mean, it's supposed to to make you go through emotions and things like that and fear and, you know, all that. What if this is going to happen? And
exactly.
You know,
so and if you're not into it, you can choose not to read it.
Exactly.
It's that
you
easy.
Don't have to apologize to anyone, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, for sure.
Right.
Yeah. The book is Mark of the Beast. How did you, you were an athlete and everything. I'm sure you're well-rounded. But how did you get into writing? At what point in your life?
Well, it kind of hit me like a bullet in the back. I was aware that I had a writing block when I was 19 years old at Stanford. My inability to write was my nemesis. And then, out of nowhere, about 10 years ago, I made certain changes in my life, and I started writing. And I didn't start writing until I was 60 years old. And
never too late, huh?
Even though I had never written before, creative before, and I just couldn't. I didn't know why I couldn't. When I started writing, it just really looked good. And my seventh play was a play called The Disappearing Quarterback, which I ended up performing as a one-man play 50 times in Philadelphia and Denver a few years ago. And that is also an audiobook as well, The Disappearing Quarterback. This particular script was something I worked on for about 7 years, on and off for 7 years. And so the fact that it finally became an audiobook is just a real joy to me. I'm so glad it finally got finished because I worked on it for so long.
Right.
But I really became a writer out of nowhere at 60 years old.
Very, very nice.
I love it. That's inspiring.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm 61. Sometimes I feel like it's the end. You know, I'm not going to start anything
new. I mean,
in
my 30s, people think it's the end at my age. People are like, oh, I've already made all the choices I'm going to have to make forever. This is it. I'm like, no.
It's never too late, huh? So 7 years is a long time.
It's time to start writing.
Yeah, exactly, you know. And 7 years is a long time. You know, I'm sure you're like extremely proud and happy that it's finally seen the light of day, you know, and also the fact that the audiobook is sort of like being played like a movie or something is another reason to listen, you know. It's not just somebody reading the story. It sounds like people are acting it out pretty much, right?
Well, they are. The two narrators, let me tell you a little bit about them, are very experienced movie actors. They have 600 movies under their belt, and if you listen to it, Paul Rohrer, my producer, performed 27 of the voices.
Oh my God!
Including two women's voices.
And wow.
Then my friend Roger Rodd, who is in Hollywood, he's an actor and a stand-up comedian at black comedy clubs for over 30 years, even though he's a skinny white guy.
Uh-huh.
He is the voice of Hunter the Demon. So they are not narrating anything. They are great theater actors, and they are performing in the strip. So it's not going to be like listening to a monotone narrator, you know, for 6 hours. It's 2 hours and 45 minutes. And it's Paul actually spent 65 hours on the sound effects.
Wow.
And if you listen to it, the sound effect for the voice of Abaddon, the destroyer from the abyss, is two plates of steel rubbed together. He somehow created that. But they are, it's more of, I think of it as an audio movie.
Right.
I did not want to create one of these monotone books that are just read, and I don't think people listen to them.
Right.
Maybe they buy them, but I think their minds just get kind of blank, and they kind of, it's hard for them to listen to that monotone. But these are actors, they are performers, and they did a really good job of it.
Amazing, amazing. Well, the book is Mark of the Beast. You can get it in audiobooks probably everywhere, right? And
Right now it's my publisher is Brook Forest Voices. It has come out last week there. I think Audible and the bigger ones take a few more weeks to get on there. So
right,
can be accessed at Brook Forest Voices.
Brook Forest Voices. Okay, sounds good. So I guess you can just look it up on Google and find out the website itself. And sounds good. And it says also are you considering making a movie out of this?
Well, that was my original goal, is to turn it into a movie. I originally, when I was going to do this as an audiobook, I wanted just to, when I sent it to potential producers, I wanted to give them a hard copy, and then I also wanted to give them an audiobook production. They could listen to that or read it. But yes, my goal is to turn it into a movie. If I could pick the guy to play Young Buck, it would be a former basketball player, college basketball player in the state of Washington, who decided to become an actor when he was a college basketball player, and that is Jim Caviezel.
Mm.
If I could pick anybody, it would be Jim Caviezel playing Young Buck.
I hope he's listening.
Yeah, that's amazing that you already...
Well, he's got some time off now. The Passion of the Christ was done, and I know he's come out with another movie, so he you know.
Very cool. So he's going to, like, well, good thing that you at least have somebody that, in mind, that you think would fit the character very well.
Right.
Yeah.
He's a former athlete. He's my same height.
Yeah.
And he's about the right age. The character Young Buck is 50 years old.
Mm. Oh, wow. Very cool. All right. Well, Mark of the Beast, the book is by Mike Barilla. And tell us the name of the publisher again, Mike.
Brook Forest Voices.
Okay.
And I also have a website.
Okay.
It went live two days ago. Uh-huh. And if you want to access it, it is markofthebeast666.net.
Nice. Okay.
Nice name.
I love that.
Don't let the name scare you. But yeah. my friend Vince Johnson Jr. thought that would be a good website address. So we just purchased that 2 days ago.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that tells the story pretty well.
Yeah, for sure.
Right.
Well, congratulations to you. Do you have any social media or anything you want people to look at?
Well, you know, my friend Vince Johnson Jr. is starting to put me on Instagram, Facebook, and some of the other stuff, but I haven't figured that out yet. I'm going to have to maybe take a course somewhere before I start doing Twitter and Instagram, but
yeah,
I know he's going to start getting me a presence on there.
Yeah.
And
just watch how-to videos on Google. Yeah,
exactly.
It'll save
you
money.
There's nothing to it, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Once you get the hang of it, it's so easy.
Exactly, and you'll realize it's a total waste of time, but it's a fun waste of time.
It's good if you're marketing something.
Yeah. But check out the website.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Mike, you were going to say?
That's a good idea. I probably do need to take some seminars, and I do want to market this as well as possible, because my goal is I want 1 million people to listen to it.
Yeah.
And in order to do that, I'm going to have to do Facebook, Instagram,
Right.
Twitter, I'm just going to have to learn how to do that and in order to get a presence out there. And what I like about all this stuff, especially the audiobook, is that it's available anywhere in the world. I mean, if you're taking a high-speed train from London to Paris, which lasts 2 hours, you can download it on the high-speed train and listen to it. It's accessible anywhere. And I really like this concept, especially when you use actors to perform the script rather than narrators to write it. So I'm really happy with the audiobook. I hope to do the e-version, and I also hope to do the hard copy version as well, because some people want to hold it in their hand.
Exactly. I'm that type, you know.
Same.
I like to hold a book. Old-fashioned, old school, you know.
Right.
All right, Mike. Well, thank you so much for entertaining us this morning and telling us about the book. Congratulations to you. It's not easy, especially when you do it for 7 years. And then you have to have a lot of people helping you with the voices and everything. So you've put in quite an effort, and I really wish you all the best and a lot of success with it. And here's to many more from you. Many more books.
Well, thank you very much, Sam.
Okay, no problem. So everybody check out the book, Mark of the Beast, and that's it. Thank you so much, Mike.
Thank you.
Thank you, both of you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I gave him a lot of time because it was interesting. He had interesting stories, you know.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you go, you become an athlete, and then you become a writer, and it's like, it seems like it's, they're not related, but, you know, he used his experience and everything.
So much experience.
To help him write the story, you know.
Yeah, athletes go through a lot.
Yeah. Well, very cool.
Yeah.
In the few minutes we have left, TikTok,
yes, TikTok.
Yeah, there's a dentist there that has like a channel and stuff.
Mm.
And he says he can detect pregnancy by looking at patients' mouths.
Ew.
Yeah. He says there's something called pregnancy gingivitis, which is caused by hormonal changes that increase blood flow to the gum tissue. So,
I don't like that.
I know, but it's amazing. You know, I guess this guy... he's got 14,000 followers, has been sharing tips about what a dentist can detect, like other things would be eating disorders, which I can understand because
Think,
like, I heard, like, when you purge and stuff, it's all acid, right?
Yeah, it can break down your esophagus and stuff.
Right, and your teeth.
Yeah, plus whatever your diet's like, you get a different kind of coating on the back of your tongue.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That's why they sell tongue scrapers.
Yeah.
But it's actually a great detection of how your health is doing.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Yeah, also sinus infections, and he can know if someone is a smoker, which that's not a big deal. You know, everybody can know that.
Yeah.
The teeth turn yellow.
Yeah, that too.
But, very interesting, you know. Very interesting stuff.
So
if you guys
wild.
Want to check him out, his name is Sukmani. Sukmani.
How'd you like that New York TikTok I sent you?
The New York TikTok. Wait, I'm trying to remember what it... Oh, yeah, when the girl was going around showing like what New York looks like, what a day in the life looks like, right?
Yes.
And she sees all the garbage on the street.
Shit everywhere. And everything. It's so random.
Right?
Nothing makes sense.
Right.
Yeah.
Pretty much all the stories you've been telling us about New York.
Yeah. It's really like that. Okay. Somebody in the comments wrote, I just can't believe how much feces is everywhere.
Feces in abundance, man.
Such everybody abundance. Can. It's everywhere.
That's terrible, man. That's very terrible.
It's all over the place.
Yeah.
No one ever cleans up their dog shit either.
Really?
Ever. And you always see in the morning when people are rushing because everyone's always rushing. Unless you're one of the people that's rushing and then you're surrounded by slow people that are not rushing.
Right.
But you always see where somebody like left dog shit and somebody was rushing and slid in it.
Oh,
you always
God.
See the whole slide across the sidewalk.
Oh my God. And then you walk around, your shoes smelling like shit.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
wow.
People thought I was crazy because I didn't let shoes in my apartment.
Yeah.
I made people take it off at the door.
Yeah. Now that makes sense.
Yeah. And people would try and, because when you live in a studio, people see your bed as another seating area. And I'm like, right. My bed is not a seating area.
Right.
Get your Subway pants off my off my bed. And people are like, Subway pants? What are you talking about? I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
I'm like, you see people sitting on the subway that look like they haven't bathed in a month. No offense to them. I know they're limited, but still, that doesn't mean I want that on my bed.
Right.
And so they have these. And then that person gets up and then like a family sits down. It's like a lady and her two like little kids and like they didn't know that what was sitting there before them. But now you're just covered in.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, you don't have the same sanitation practices necessarily.
That's true.
So that's true.
So you should just put like spikes on your bed or something. Nobody will sit.
Yeah, like those pigeon spikes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody will sit on it.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
The worst.
It is. Living in a studio is not easy, you know?
No. My studio was it was bigger than this room.
Yeah.
By maybe like half of a room.
Yeah.
So like one and a half of this. No. To have a bed and a couch.
Right.
Yeah. And the wall and like the walls are set up weird, so like the only way that it would make sense would be to have the bed and the couch on the same wall, but because of that I could only have a mini couch.
Yeah,
so it was, I just had a small tiny little couch.
Yeah, that's the thing, you have to find special furniture for your studio apartment.
Yeah, definitely special furniture.
Yeah
we had tiny refrigerator, tiny oven. I remember buying a pizza pan because I make homemade pizzas. I was so excited about this pizza pan. I spent, I think, like $50 or $60 on it. I was like,
wow.
Yeah, I'm buying a pizza pan. I like make the whole pizza, the dough or whatever. I put everything on it. I assemble it and I go to put it in the oven and it was too big for the oven.
It didn't fit. Oh, my God.
I was like,
yeah. God, the things people don't think about, you know.
Mm-hmm. Having a tiny little freezer.
How do I fit my pizza in the oven?
Yeah. Fridge is tiny, and because the fridge is so tiny, it freezes stuff if it's too close to the back of it.
Right.
Yeah.
Jeez. Well, we're glad to have you in LA where you have a little
more. I could
more
go
space.
On for days. I could literally never shut up about how much I hate that place.
Wow. So it was a no-brainer for you to move here.
Yeah. Yeah. Once I got here and saw what it was like here, I was like, oh, what have I been doing? What a mess.
I know. I don't know, you know, I mean, when people move, you have to consider the weather. And there's nowhere, I mean, everywhere that you think you're moving, people tell you, oh, it's terrible weather. It's cold, it's rainy, it's humid, it's hot. It's this, it's dry, it's moist.
Dry is
whatever.
Great.
Well, it depends. If it's 120 degrees like Arizona or Nevada, that's not a lot of fun. You know, I mean, I lived in Vegas two separate times.
Yeah.
You don't get used to the heat, you know. It's just like, it's too much. Hmm. It's too much. I mean, people say, yeah, it's dry heat and stuff, but it doesn't matter. I mean, you can friggin' cook an egg on your...
I saw somebody try to put cookie dough on it and they baked cookies in their car.
Right. And imagine if you have a pet, you know, how do you get them even to walk on the sidewalk?
Yeah, you got to get them little shoes.
Right. You know, I mean, somebody posted on Facebook or something about, you know, if it's too hot for you to walk barefoot, it's too hot for your dog, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we don't think about that, you know.
Yeah.
But in the summer, the ground is pretty hot, even here.
Even now, yeah. When the sun is on a spot, walking down a driveway.
Right.
Way too hot.
Yeah. Poor dogs.
I know.
Yeah. But at least here people pick up the shit for the most part.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Downtown, not so much, but yeah.
Yeah. So downtown here is pretty bad too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just hear people walking, you know, and this private yard so people can see you, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's when like there's just one person walking down the street. It's not like you're
right.
You're hidden by a bunch of people and you can just do your shitty moves and then leave.
Right.
Yeah.
When I lived down here in an apartment in the building next to us, the manager would always be at his window and starting to yell at people. It's like, pick up your dog shit, you know? This is a private property.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah.
You just should.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
All right. Well, everybody, thank you for listening. We thank Mike Barilla for calling in.
Thanks, Mike.
Go and get Mark of the Beast, an audiobook. And thank you all for listening. Jen, thank you as always.
Thank you.
And we'll see everybody tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
Bye.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, only on LA Talk Radio.